It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, D-Bro, and riding co-pilot, as always, on this amazing week one DFS season. It's here! Woo-hoo! Oh, man, it's time to set some lineups, baby. My co-host Adam Pfeiffer is running co-pilot with me today, and it is time to talk game by game. Adam and I are going to break down all things DFS, talking to you about pricing, talking to you about punt plays, pivots, stacks, games we like, games we're fading. Adam, are you ready for this, man?
This is the most excited I've been to record a podcast in, I don't know, maybe since last week one. I mean, and with everything that's happened during the offseason and stuff like that, it seems like it's been even longer since we don't have football. But yeah, this is going to be the most in-depth game-by-game podcast you will find, and we are going to make it our duty to help you win in DFS. And the cool thing about this game-by-game podcast is, yeah, it's mainly DFS-centric, but it's going to help you with seasonal. We're talking about players and matchups. Yep. At the end of the day, like, there's going to be pricing we'll talk about and pivots and ownership and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, we're still talking about players and how we think they're going to do in their matchups, and it can really help you in seasonal too. So I'm stoked.
Yeah, dude, I can't wait. And I love your point about season long. Yes, if we're telling you to play them in DFS, obviously we're going to be telling you to start them or to sit them in your season-long league. So I love that point you're making. So before we kick this off, dude, I want to remind people, Kenny Golladay helmet is in my possession, and it's ready to go out as soon as we hit 100 reviews on iTunes. So head over to the Twitter handle, @ChalkFade, RT the pin tweet, rate and review us on iTunes, DM us a screenshot of said review, and you are entered to win. Reviews are still flying in, man. Like, we are getting constantly tons of them a day. So we are going to hit 100 really soon. Do not miss out on this, because it is awesome. It's a beautiful helmet, and it's so easy. It literally takes you 1 minute to get entered to win this bad boy. All right, man. Look, Seattle is taking on the Falcons. Seattle is favored by one. This total's at 49, one of the highest totals on the slate. What do you see for this game, Adam?
I see a shootout. I really do. I tweeted it. I mean, yep. Seattle, these are two teams that were both bottom five in pressure rate on defense last year. Atlanta was third worst. Seattle was fifth worst. And Seattle lost to Devon Clowney. I expect Russell Wilson and Matt Ryan to have a lot of time to throw the football. And I expect this game to really shoot out. I mean, I like both quarterbacks in this game. There's obvious stackability with both sides, whether you want to use Russ with DK and or Lockett, or you want to use Matt Ryan with Julio and or Calvin Ridley, and we'll talk about Hayden Hurst in a little bit too. I think there's so many plays on offense that you can look at. The bigger question for me is, how do we view the running backs? Because there are some question marks with both. I mean, Chris Carson was a little banged up heading into week one. You know, he had the injury, came off last year. He seems to be good to go. There was some reports about maybe mixing in Carlos Hyde a little bit to keep him fresh. We'll see about that. And then you have Todd Gurley, who, if healthy and if good to go, we'll probably get 15 to 20 touches right away, but you worry about the efficiency, you know, dropping off last year, his lateral agility, and the fact that, you know, they had, it was crazy with Atlanta because there was the, you know, we don't really know about his injury, how his, you know, his leg is right now and everything like that, or his knee. And then like a couple weeks later, they're like, yeah, he's going to get 15 to 25 touches every week. Like, I don't know. I'm staying more away in DFS from the running backs compared to the pass catchers and the passing games from this game. But there is a lot of potential for a shootout here. Like I said, Falcons 18.4% pressure rate on defense last year, third worst in the NFL. And Russell Wilson, by the way, led the NFL in completion percentage with a clean pocket. So that is not good to not be able to pressure Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, I think to answer your question about the running backs, I'm probably just staying away because Chris Carson was limited all training camp, and I just don't know if we see this massive workload out the gate for him with such a limited training camp. Like, I think this could be a little bit more of a 60-40 split, and I mean, if you look at last year, both of these run defenses were not, I mean, they weren't great, but they weren't terrible. I mean,
yeah, Atlanta was the run defense where they were like Tampa Bay light. Like, they were good on a yards per carry basis, not nearly as good, but they'll give it up to pass catcher running backs because they have for, you know, four straight years now. But is Chris Carson going to have that role right away? We don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, to your point, I mean, Atlanta was actually sneaky better versus running backs last year versus, I mean, both of these teams actually were really good versus pass catching running backs. I mean, in DVOA, Seattle was 10th and Atlanta was 13th, which was a big departure from previous years because every other year in DFS, it's been, okay, play the running back versus Atlanta because they're going to catch a ton of passes. And that kind of leads me into what we saw for Atlanta. Like, their defensive change down the stretch last year. And for everybody, I talked about this last year. Look, they changed up. They scrapped their entire defensive scheme. Mm-hmm. They were a zone-heavy team at the beginning. And so after the bye weeks, they went super man-press heavy. And that's why you saw these cornerbacks play better down the stretch. Like, Isaiah Oliver is going to be matched up with DK Metcalf. It's not necessarily a matchup I want to exploit. Like, I get I think people are going to naturally go to DK in this game because he is cheaper than Tyler Lockett. But I'm actually want Tyler Lockett in this game. Like, we talked about Darquez Dennard yesterday. And, dude, Tyler Lockett's speed screaming out of the slot versus Denard's 4.540. The Falcons' slot corner, and I talked about man press a ton. In the slot, they still had their slot corner last year run about 50% zone. We know that Tyler Lockett can absolutely eviscerate zone. And Denard last year was bad in zone. Like, he allowed 11 catches on his 13 zone targets for a 112 QBR. I think that Lockett can absolutely eat him up in this game. And so, like you're talking about, I'm staying away from the running backs. I think there are just better running backs. And week one, pricing is soft right now, man. Like, I just don't think that there's a reason to go to Todd Gurley, to go to Chris Carson. I think that this is going to, like you're talking about, be a shootout. I'm more inclined to play Matt Ryan than I am to play Russ. Russ is the second most expensive quarterback at 7K on DK. Now, Matt Ryan's still up there, but he's at 6,700. Calvin Ridley can smash in this game. He's going against Griffin. And Griffin, he played basically a myriad of different coverages last year. But if you look at what he played the most, he played zone at 37%, and he was in the 30s for press. Calvin Ridley has been a monster versus zone coverage. Like, he can absolutely eat it up. Like, last year, 58 targets. He caught 41 of them, 3 touchdowns, and a 116 QBR. But I'm not going to tell you not to play Ridley and even possibly Julio in this game, because I think that Julio can get the best of Dunbar. But I really am more inclined to play Ridley and then and team Matt Ryan with Hayden Hurst. We talked about Hayden Hurst yesterday on yesterday's episode. Seattle is atrocious versus tight ends. Like, they just straight give it up versus tight ends. So I'm totally in on, like, if I'm going to stack this game, for me, it's Matt Ryan, it's Ridley. If you want to team him with Julio, that's fine. But they're not cheap. I'm more inclined to go Ryan, Ridley, Hurst, and then running back with Lockett and stay away from the other options in this game, because Atlanta's actually really good versus tight ends, so I don't know what that split looks like. Olsen versus Disley versus, they even have Hollister is still there. And I talked about DK. I think Oliver's actually a pretty damn good cornerback, so I'm probably not going to roll with DK. If you want to double stack him with Russ, and if Russ hits the ceiling week in this game, I'm not going to fault you for that, because obviously that's where I think that is going to be the second option, this passing game, because Dorsett's been a little bit limited in practice. You always have the ghost of David Moore sitting in the background. So, I obviously, this passing game, I think, runs through those two main veins. But any other thoughts on this game, Adam?
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how Seattle uses Jamal Adams. We talked about yesterday how he would blitz a lot with the Jets, because that's what Greg Williams does. He blitzes more than any defensive coordinator in the NFL. And now you have Seattle, where they'll probably have him blitz a little bit too. Is he going to, you know, just man up guys? I don't know. I don't think it's going to be as much as he blitzed with the Jets, obviously. But still, I mean, Seattle last year, second most fantasy points per game to tight ends, third most targets per game at just under 9. Hayden Hurst should be in a good spot here to have his debut game with the Falcons. I have no problem, you know, playing Matt Ryan with Julio and Ridley and then running it back, because I do think this game is going to shoot out. I do agree Ridley has the better matchup between the two Atlanta receivers. So I think it's a really, really interesting game because there's two defensive lines. Like, that's one of my biggest factors when looking at quarterbacks and passing games. If I can get teams and players against pass rushes that aren't making an impact, that is what I target all the time. And clearly these are two teams in Seattle. I mean, they were bad all last year with Jadeveon Clowney playing for them for a little bit, and I don't see how they're much better this year. So I expect very little pass rush from both these defensive lines. The question is, are either of these offensive lines good enough even against bad pass rushes? I'll say yes, and I like a lot of players from this passing attack.
Yeah, and again, I think a lot of people, if they're looking to double stack Ryan in this game, there's just so many running backs on this slate that I want to get in my lineups. And paying $7,700 and then stacking Ridley with him for $6,100, it doesn't leave you a lot of wiggle room if you want to play a lot of these other running backs, unless you're just going to play punt receivers.
Well, that's the thing. We'll talk about it. There are a lot of really, really good running back plays that are just too cheap because pricing came out so early and the pricing just so soft. So I think you can literally this week go with any sort of roster construction that you want.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the great things about week one. We see that the pricing is softer as it goes through the season. It tightens up, and we're talking about some thinner plays. We'll be talking to you about more of these 4K plays, these punt plays, to make your lineups work, because that's what it's going to get to, dude. And I just don't think that this week, you don't have to be cute. You don't have to try to wedge in all these like 4K plays, because the way that pricing is, it just doesn't dictate that you have to do that. So moving over to the Jets versus the Buffalo Bills, this is the lowest total on the slate at 39.5. The Bills are favored by 6. Dear God in heaven, I don't want to like this game because of the total, but after looking at this game, Adam, I like this game a little bit more than I originally thought, but I'm going to let your Bills homerism lead off with this. What do you see here, dude?
I think we're going to be picking on the Jets quite a bit this year, especially the secondary. I mean, you know, they were bad against receivers last year. Their corners were bad. Their best player from their entire team is now in Seattle in Jamal Adams. I just think this is a really nice spot for Stephon Diggs in his debut. I mean, he's going to see a lot of Pierre Desir. Jeff Ratcliffe has his wide receiver cornerback matchup chart on the site that you should look at. But according to that, I mean, Desir allowed 0.32 fantasy points per route. It's one of the worst numbers on the slate. Stephon Diggs looks incredible in camp right now. Like, he's going at Tre'Davious White in practice every day. And, like, he's winning a lot. And Tre'Davious White's, what, the second best corner in the NFL? So
dude, Just say he's the best one. I know that you're...
Stephon Gilmore, I think, is better. I won't lie. I think he's better than Ramsey, though. I do think he's better than Ramsey. But anyway, so he's going to have no trouble with these corners. I do think Buffalo is going to still be, you know, top 10 in run rate this year. That's still going to be their identity. But they are going to open it up a bit more for Josh Allen, who, at his price, like, he's fine. You know you're going to get the rushing from him. I know he said he's going to run less. I don't really buy it. He's fine at his price. I don't go to him that much because I just, you know, I think there's a little bit more upside with, like, Tom Brady at the same price tag, Matt Ryan a little bit more. Like, he's at a price where he's not that far off from everybody except for really from Lamar Jackson. So, like, if you get to him, I like pairing him with Diggs, but it's not, like, a priority for me. And then probably going to avoid the backfield for now. I just, you know, Singletary is a good player. Zach Moss is really good in camp right now, but this Jets run defense was arguably the best in the NFL last year. That's still where the strength of their defense lies, not to mention you have the fact that what's the usage going to be? Is Zach Moss going to get the goal line work right away? Josh Allen's still there that could steal rushing touchdowns away. So I'm completely off the backfield. I'm more interested in this game is Jameson Crowder. He had 27 targets in two games against Buffalo last year. And it makes sense. Like, he had 17 in the week one game, which, you know, is he going to get 17 targets in this game? I would be shocked. But you look at how you attack this Bills defense. You don't throw it against Tre'Davious White, and I don't think they're going to do that with Breshad Perriman here. Levi Wallace is a decent corner. He's not great, but I still don't think Denzel Mims is going to be a huge part of their game plan in this first game. And the Bills played a lot of zone defense last year. Like, I think Crowder at 5,200 could kind of get a really ugly 8 for 85 game and be perfectly fine. So I like Crowder a lot. And then Chris Herndon. There's a lot of really cheap tight ends this week. 3,300 for Chris Herndon, who's apparently developing a really nice rapport with Sam Darnold in camp. The Bills were good against tight ends last year, but it's more of a price and position play for Chris Herndon. So that's kind of where I'm at for this game. And I'm hoping the Bills don't embarrass me and just do what they should do and win, 27-6 in this game.
Any Le'Veon Bell love for you?
He's cheap enough on DraftKings to where, he could get, six catches. But, again, pricing is so soft this week. Le'Veon is 5,600. I might just swing for the fences and play Jonathan Taylor. And I definitely
or
like
play Mark Ingram.
I would much rather play Mark Ingram. So I probably won't get to any. I like Le'Veon Bell a lot in this spot in week one last year. I was the only one that liked him. He had a receiving touchdown and did good as a pass catcher. But it's a different circumstance because there weren't concerns about his usage heading into that game or that season. Frank Gore's there. Frank Gore's legitimately going to be part of this offense. I'm not into it. I'm off it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I can't play Bell at his price tag. There are so many running backs on DK that are around him that are either in better matchups, better players, better game scripts. And we're going to get to all of them, but there's no way. I don't want any Le'Veon Bell this week. If you look at, there's just so many different parts or pieces of why not to play Bell. But for this game, for me, I am not playing any of the running backs from this game.
Nope.
I'm not on any of the running backs from this game. For me, it's the pass catchers. You're talking about Jamison Crowder. I think that he's a fine play. He's 5,200 going against Teron Johnson in the slot. Teron Johnson is not good, okay? He allowed 20 of his 24 targets to be caught last year, 108 QBR in the slot. And Jamison Crowder, we know he can eat up zone, and Teron was playing that over 50% in the slot. I do think that it's getting cute to go with Denzel Mims. The thing about it is, and yes, I'm with you, no Perriman. Tre'Davious White's going to be in his back pocket all frappin' game. But Denzel Mims, I got to talk about him for a little bit, because if you're running 150, you're MMEing. As crazy as it sounds, I'm in on getting a tiny bit of exposure on him. He's 4,300. And the reason why is, you're talking about Levi Wallace, and I think you're being a little bit kind. I think Levi Wallace, hashtag bad.
We need to ask somebody else, because I'll never deny me being a homer. I think Levi Wallace is better than people think. The guy was an undrafted rookie, was really solid at Alabama, then he had some injuries. But I think when he's right, he's a solid corner. I wouldn't want him. He's not the greatest number two cornerback in the NFL, obviously, but the thing is, teams are going to throw at him and Teron Johnson so much because they're not going anywhere near the god that is Tre'Davious White. But that's just their philosophies. They're not throwing at him.
We know Denzel Mims is an athletic freak. Dude runs a 4.3 versus Levi Wallace, who runs a freaking 4.6.
Yeah, he's a very, very big, slow corner.
Denzel Mims played all on the outside while at Baylor. I know that camp has been limited, but it literally takes two bombs, him getting behind Levi Wallace. And Levi Wallace, in man press coverage last year, Adam, 26 targets were caught versus his 26 receptions on 39 targets in man press. He gave up 5 touchdowns on those 39 targets. It's not crazy to say that Denzel Mims could get behind Levi Wallace for two long scores here. And I'm talking about being too cute. If you're playing single entry, you're playing 3 max, which is a lot of what I do. Yes, it's probably getting too cute to play Denzel Mims. If you're playing a 20 max, you're playing 150, I think that you need to get some exposure to Denzel Mims. I'm not going to tell you that it's going to be a lot, but if you're stacking this game, I really think you could see a crazy freaking week one type of Marquise Brown explosion from Denzel Mims here, and nobody's going to freaking play him. And I just last year with Levi Wallace was a guy that I picked on in a lot of weeks.
Yeah, but teams are going to throw at him. He was targeted 7 times a game last year. They're going to throw to him, especially because, like I said, you're not throwing to Tre'Davious White, and you want to stay away from the second best safety duo in the NFL? Maybe third? Yep. I mean, I mean, Poyer and Micah Hyde are just ball hawks. So, like, Levi Wallace was literally targeted 7 times a game in covers last year. So I don't think it's the craziest play. I just think there's other guys that, around that range that I think are in more advantageous spots. But if, you know, if anybody's going to go off from this, like, if anybody's going to catch a long bomb from this team, it's going to be Mims. Because Perriman, you know, unless Tre'Davious White slips on something, is not getting anything on him.
I'm with you on Buffalo receivers, by the way. And if anybody's looking to double stack Josh Allen, do not do it with Cole Beasley. Brian Poole was the guy we used to pick on in DFS.
All the time. He got a lot better.
You know, the thing is he went to a scheme that fits his skill set. The Falcons were a zone-heavy team, and Brian Poole in zone is hashtag bad. Like, his splits in man coverage, which the Jets run a lot of man, his splits are massive. He is the best corner that the Jets have, and I don't want any of that action versus Cole Beasley. But as far as Diggs and Brown on the outside, yeah dude,
We saw what John Brown did against his team in week one last year. I think a double stack is really interesting because most people will be like, oh, first of all, you don't even have to stack Josh Allen, but if I do, I'm just going to play, you know, this new shiny receiver in Stephon Diggs. But like the both John Brown and Diggs are in great spots here, so.
Well, they're super affordable too. Like, John Brown's 5,600, Diggs is 6,400. Brown is going to, if you're going to play one of them as a one-off, I'm actually going to tell you to play John Brown because, one, yes, the price point. But number two, this dude is going to face Bless Austin, which, bless his heart, runs a 4.7 40.
I remember if there was any sort of semblance of a speedy receiver and he was going against Bless Austin, I was like, yep, just put him in.
Yeah, dude. And then Desir is not – you can easily beat him as well. Like, we're talking about man press coverage and stuff like that, and that's what the Jets – that's their wheelhouse – Desir is not a great fit for this defense. Like, I think that we're going to be picking on him probably a lot of this year. You look at last year with Indy, 20 receptions on 28 targets, and he allowed 3 touchdowns. People just ate him up in man and press. So I love John Brown and Diggs. The more and more I look at this game, I think that this could go over the total, as nasty as the pace is possibly going to be. I really think that we could see some long, deep shots and some big plays out of this game. And I really don't know if a lot of people are going to sit here and look at this game and gravitate to it, considering, like we're talking about, there are some really juicy games on the slate here. So I think there's a lot of really good spots for some one-offs. Even if you don't want to stack this game, like, you're like, look, lowest total on the slate, I'm not going to fight you on that, because I think that's a definitive concern, as well as the pace. But there are a lot of players in this game that could be set up as good one-offs for ceiling weeks, even if you don't like the game as a whole.
Yeah, 100%. And we see it in week one all the time. Like, a lot of these week one winning lineups have these kind of crazier one-offs that just, you know, are 2% rostered, and they are the huge difference makers.
Yeah, I don't want any of the tight ends, by the way.
No.
Like,
I'm not on Buffalo. I'm going to have some Herndon just because he's so cheap, and he's going to have a pretty significant role in this offense. There are. I tweeted it, though. There's a handful of really viable cheap tight ends this week.
Like, I hear the Herndon love. I've got to see it, dude. Like, and I know that, like, sounds like such a cop-out and such a hedge. Adam Gase has not given a high target share to any of his tight ends previously, not outside of the 1 year when everybody else on the Bears roster died. And it was,
I will say, Ryan Griffin was like a top 12 tight end during a solid stretch last year. So, like,
yeah, but that's a low bar, dude. Like, what if Ryan Griffin sees some work here? Like, can we say that, like,
yeah, but I mean, Herndon's only 3,300. He doesn't have to do much.
And it's
a position where if I'm not playing Kittle or Ertz, I'm probably just going to spend down.
Well, and we'll get to it, man. There's some other tight ends that are in that range that I like a lot more. But moving over to the next game, Chicago is heading to Detroit. 43.5 game total. Detroit, I mean, this is basically a pick 'em. Detroit's up a point and a half. What do you see for this game? I think this could be a sneaky pass-heavy game.
Yeah, I do too. A lot of people are probably – I think there's going to be a handful of people that do go to Mitchell Trubisky. He's had some really strong fantasy games against Detroit last year. I think he's viable if you want to go that cheap at quarterback. I mean, Detroit last year allowed the fourth most yards per drive in the NFL. They're not a particularly good defense. They have some new faces in there now with Desmond Trufant and Jeff Okuda. They're number one and number two corners. Obviously, Darius Slay is gone. But the rest of the defense, I mean – not great. I really like Allen Robinson here. He's priced really nicely. He's going to, you know, he's so matchup proof anyway, and neither of these corners really scare me. And then Anthony Miller, we talked about. He's going to see Justin Coleman. Justin Coleman was not good in slot coverage last year. Miller was in the slot 78% of the time. And Mitchell Trubisky last year targeted the slot over 53% of the time. It was the highest rate among all quarterbacks. I really like Anthony Miller a lot in this game. I think he's a guy that, you know, if you look at his numbers, when he got like five or more targets last year, he was good. It's just that the inconsistency was there. Taylor Gabriel, when he was out of the lineup, Miller was a lot better in fantasy, and Gabriel is now gone. They have nothing else at receiver outside of him and Robinson. Their tight end position is a mess. And Dave Montgomery is banged up. He might play, but that could be a reason why the Bears just go more pass-heavy here. So I really, really like Anthony Miller a lot in this game. I'm perfectly fine with Allen Robinson. If we get word that Dave Montgomery on Thursday or Friday is good to go for this game, do you have any interest? Because Detroit was so bad against the run. They only stuffed 12% of carries at the line of scrimmage last year. That was the lowest rate in the NFL. I probably agree with you just because of the pricing on this slate and everything, but more of a seasonal play. Like, I'd be fine with Montgomery as a flex or a running back too if he's active. The matchup is that good. But yeah, just something to keep an eye on. It looks like he could play. If he doesn't play, are you going to Tariq Cohen, or is that a stay away?
I get it, man. Again, I think that Tariq Cohen's just too thin for me. Like, with all the running back plays on this slate, I understand it. If you're going to stack Trubisky, that's fine. Like, I'm more just inclined to not play Tariq Cohen this week because there's a lot of different factors there. So I really like the receivers for Chicago. I think that if they are...
Anthony Miller is my favorite player from this entire game. I don't know how weird that is.
Same. And I hear a lot of love for Allen Robinson. And I don't disagree with it, dude.
He's
like,
fine.
I really don't.
He's fine.
But Anthony Miller smashed this defense in the mouth last time they played them. Like, he had one of those ceiling weeks. We talked about it previously. We talked about waiver wire pickups. Go back and listen to that episode. I think Anthony Miller is the play. Like, he's my favorite play out of this entire... Like, yeah. Well, I don't want to bury it too much.
This is a game that includes Marvin Jones, and I like Anthony Miller a little bit more. I know Marvin Jones smashes press coverage, and they're going to talk about that. And listen, I'm never going to say Marvin Jones is a bad play because he's the greatest player to ever step foot in an NFL stadium. But, like, Anthony Miller is going against Justin Coleman, who allowed nearly 2 fantasy points per target last year. Like, that's a terrible number. He allowed over a half a fantasy point per snap in coverage. And he allowed, 12.5 yards per reception? Like, he was awful in slot coverage last year. And Anthony Miller, there's hype around him. Like, the Bears offense, I say it all the time, cannot get worse than it was last year. And what is he, 5K? I really like Anthony Miller a lot this week. And he's probably going to be one of the reasons why I don't play as much DeSean Jackson. Because DeSean Jackson's right around the same price. And I think I'd rather play Anthony Miller, as crazy as that might sound.
It's not crazy. I think Anthony Miller is an elite pivot this week. I think that he's a great, great play. Because like you're talking about, everybody that's scrolling down on DK is going to look at DeSean Jackson and just pencil him in. And they're not going to stare at Anthony Miller at 5K. So I love him as a wonderful pivot on this slate. I like this game, man, because if Chicago gets down, last year they were 8th in negative script passing rate. They could go pass heavy, and as nasty as you think Trubisky is, I wrote him up in QB Streamers over on FTN Fantasy. And look, I said he's the break glass in case of emergency quarterback. But if you looked at him, Detroit was not good versus the pass last year. Like, they were 28th in DVOA. Trubisky finished as the QB8 and QB4 in his 2 games versus Detroit. He can have a ceiling game here. So I do prefer Matt Stafford if you want to go with one of the quarterbacks out of this because, like we're going to get to, it's not the running games. Hakeem Hicks is back. He is going to stuff the run. The Lions are not. I don't want any other running backs.
They're talking about giving Peterson a significant role in Week 1. Like, I'm good. I'm so good on that.
I don't want any of the running backs from this game. It's the receivers for me, dude, because even we don't know what T.J. Hockenson's role versus Danny Amendola. Amendola was limited. I think he plays. I need to see T.J. Hockenson get the target share before I'm willing to sit here and roll him at a lineup. Even though the Bears are middle of the road versus tight ends, I'm not going to play Dusty Jimmy Graham. The receivers are where it's at in this game. Yes, Allen Robinson can get behind Trufant. or the other outside corners, like with Okuda as a rookie on the outside. It's really, Anthony Miller is the great play in this game. I absolutely love him. And both of the Lions receivers, like Kenny Golladay and Marvin Jones, the Bears play a ton of man press coverage. And if you look at Marvin Jones' splits over the last two seasons, he dominates man press. Like, he is a man press dominator. Dude separates, catches long bombs. And it, this secondary, the Bears' defense, I'm not going to tell you is bad, because they are not. They're a good unit. But their secondary is a really, really big concern. Like, they were going to lean on Artie Burns, and he's already out for the year, and he wasn't even good to begin with. Kyle Fuller can be beat, especially deep. So I think that you could beat Fuller. They're counting on Jalen Johnson, a rookie, to step in off of a modified offseason, trying to learn this system and hit the ground running from week one, versus, like, even if you're talking about Kevin Tolliver getting snaps, dude, the receivers here are in great spots. So for me, if you want to go Stafford, Golladay, stack it up with Marvin Jones, and running back cheaply with Anthony Miller, I think that's going to be a much less popular correlation than other people are going to. I think people are going to gravitate to Allen Robinson, and I'm not saying I don't like him, but I think that Anthony Miller offers you leverage on DeSean Jackson stands, as well as I think people are just going to go to Allen Robinson more so over Anthony Miller. And if Desmond Trufant has anything left in the tank, I'm not saying that he can stay with Allen Robinson the entire game, but Anthony Miller has dominated Justin Coleman. We've seen it happen, and I think we're in to see it again this week. Any further thoughts on this game before we move on?
Nope. Love Anthony Miller. Like I mentioned, Trubisky targeted the slot, the highest rate in the NFL last year, and Detroit gave up an average depth of target of 10.4 last year, second most in the NFL behind Miami. They give up a lot of big passing plays. I think Anthony Miller could take advantage this week. I like him a lot.
All right, so let's head over to the Green Bay game. So Green Bay takes on the Vikings. Game total's at 46. Vikings are favored by 3.5. Adam, what do you see for this game, dude?
See a lot of Davante Adams. I really do. I mean, Minnesota was awful against receivers last year. They allowed the second most receptions per game to wideouts, the sixth most targets per game. And, you know, whether some of the players they had in their secondary last year were good or not, I mean, they lost them. And now they're relying on rookies Jeff Gladney and Cameron Dantzler. They're going to have Dantzler on the outside with Holton Hill, who they're just really not able to cover Davante Adams. Mike Hughes will be on the inside alongside Jeff Gladney. So, yeah, I think Davante Adams, you can make the case, is one of, if not the best receiver on the slate. We know where the targets are going in this offense. The way the rest of this Minnesota defense is shaping up right now, I know they lost Danielle Hunter on the pass rush for the first couple weeks, but with their safeties that they can have come into the box and defend the run with Harrison Smith and Anthony Harris, like, I just think they still have some decent outside linebackers and off-ball linebackers. This offense is going to run through Davante Adams this season. I think it starts this week.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Davante Adams is one of my favorite plays on the entire slate, because I think that people are going to look at the Vikings and on paper and say, yeah, I don't want to play against the Vikings. And I think it's a mismatch, man. Like, I think that it's a mistake to fade Adams. Like you're talking about, the corners for the Vikings are not good. And that's actually why I as nasty as it sounds, and I know we have just totally crapped on this entire team all offseason long, I've got a little bit of interest in Aaron Rodgers this week, because he's at 6,300. Nobody's going to rush to play him. We've seen this Packers passing offense has taken down a millimaker for people before, okay? And I think this game is a sneaky, sneaky shootout. Like, if you look at it, so if the Vikings get down in this game, and if any of the things from last season carry over to this year with Kubiak, in neutral and negative game scripts, they were 10th and 6th in pace. The Vikings could run more, some more plays than people are giving them credit here, especially if the Packers get up on them. And, dude, I know it's not a sexy play, and maybe this is a little bit too thin for everybody. Marquez Valdes-Scantling has been getting a lot of steam in practice, and going against this secondary, he's going to see a lot of Cameron Dantzler, and I really think that people are going to talk about. So we talked about Mike Hughes is the best cornerback that the Vikings have, especially he's going to be in the slot versus Lazard. Valdes-Scantling is going to play the outside. And I really think that he is a good play this week, or at least somebody you need to consider, because he's at 4,100. And before he went out with the knee sprain, you saw him get 6 targets, 5 targets, 10 targets, 7 targets. And then, yes, he was on the field, but his snap percentages and this team went away from him. I think the injury had a lot to do with that. And I really think that, as crazy as it sounds, Adam, and I know I'm probably just drinking the Kool-Aid here, I think Scantling could have a ceiling week this week.
I don't hate it. I mean, he's listed as number 3 on the depth chart, but that's obviously because Lazard's in man the slot, and that's the worst matchup of the 3 spots for receiver for Green Bay. So I kind of like it. I'm not there at tight end yet with this team. Aaron Jones is kind of interesting. We're both kind of low on Aaron Jones this year, yeah. But he ran all over Minnesota last year. They don't have Pierce in the interior of their defensive line, who opted out, and now Danielle Hunter is out. Like, could this be a sneaky good spot for him? Yeah, I would rather play the other running backs around his price range personally. And I'd rather, and you know, they're not exactly the same price, but I'd much rather play the other running back from this game, who I think is going to go a little bit overlooked in GPPs. I mean, Dalvin Cook has destroyed the Packers. He did so last year. He's in a price range where people are either going to just say, you know what, I'm getting McCaffrey, I'm getting the safety that he brings me, or I'm going to Josh Jacobs, Austin Eckler, these really solid running backs under the 7K range. But, I mean, Dalvin Cook's in a really good spot here. Green Bay allowed 1.2 rushing touchdowns per game last year, fourth most in the NFL. 51.2% of the touchdowns allowed by the Packers last year came via the run, second highest rate in the league. I think it's a really good spot for Dalvin Cook, and he's going to continue to be a presence in the passing game, so that helps too. I really think Dalvin Cook in GPPs is going to go a little bit overlooked, and I think it could be a mistake.
Yeah, dude, Mike Patine is totally fine with giving up all kinds of rushing production. Like, if you go look at the Green Bay coaching profile, they give it up religiously year after year after year after year. It does not matter. We saw the San Francisco 49ers. That's all they freaking did in the playoffs was run on this team. I love that call on Dalvin Cook. I love him in GPPs. And I really think in this game, Adam, so I'm talking about, if the Packers get out to an early lead and the Vikings do go pass heavy or they run more plays, dude, you could play Dalvin Cook and Adam Thielen and possibly get all the touchdowns from this game. It's not crazy to say that. So at looking at this game, my favorite plays, if you're going to go with Aaron Rodgers, it's Adams and Scantling and running it back with Thielen and Dalvin Cook. I like Irv Smith as a punt play in this because I think that at 3,100, if he's the second option and the Vikings go pass heavy, if you game stack this game or if you want to play Irv Smith as a punt play, I really, really like him because he's not going to garner any ownership this week.
I'm playing a ton of Irv Smith because, look, we talk about it a lot already in this offseason. The correlation between the timing of Justin Jefferson hasn't really taken control of that wide receiver 2 spot, BC's got him in the number 2, and at the same time, they're talking about experimenting Irv Smith out wide. I think they're going to use him a lot more this year in the passing game, and, you know, this is a very, very, very concentrated passing game right now. It's going to be Thielen and Dalvin Cook, and then Irv Smith has the next opportunity up. So at 3,100, yeah, I'm going to be playing a lot of Irv Smith if I go cheap at tight end.
Yeah, in Green Bay last year, 26th in DVOA versus tight ends.
And they lost Blake Martinez at linebacker, didn't they? Yeah, their linebackers aren't great either, so.
Yeah, I'm totally with you, man. Any other thoughts on this game before we move on?
This will be a great week for us if both Adam Thielen and Irv Smith go off for the brand.
Yes! Hashtag brand, baby! I'm here for it, man. All right, let's move over to South Beach. Miami is actually, well, let's head over to Foxborough. The Miami Dolphins are heading to New England. Total's at 43.5, one of the lowest on the slate. It's actually the third lowest right now. New England is favored by 6. Adam, I'm telling you right now, dude, I'm fading this entire game. I don't want any part of this game. I get people want to play Cam Newton. I don't know where the damn ball is going to go. Like, Cam could rush it in twice. I'm not going to fight anybody on that. He could toss it to James White or Edelman. I think that this game, just for what I see, I actually think this game could hit the under on the total. And I think that Miami's going to run slow as they're going to be like molasses. Like, Chan Gailey's offense, I wrote this up in Pace and Play Calling. The last time we saw his offense, 32nd, 31st, 32nd in all different game scripts as far as pace. I think this game is going to be slow. I think you're going to see a lot of Jordan Howard. Patriots still have a really elite secondary, but their defensive line lost a lot of guys that headed over to Detroit. I don't want any parts or pieces of this game, but are you with me, Adam, or is there anybody from this game you want to play?
The only guy I'm interested in is Cam Newton. Miami's defense...
Are you going to run him naked?
I am.
Okay.
I am. I'm not expecting him to go out and have, you know, 280 passing yards and a couple passing touchdowns, but I just really like playing, and I still think Cam is going to run. I think he's going to be effective when running, and New England came out today and said they expect him to be effective while running too. I don't think they're just going to be like, yeah, Cam, you're going to sit in the pocket. Miami is obviously, you know, with Brian Flores, you know, a Bill Belichick, you know, disciple, they're going to play a lot of man. They played man at the sixth highest rate in the NFL last year. The fourth highest rate in the NFL last year at 61% of the time. Man defense is great for rushing quarterbacks because the corners and the defenders' backs are turned. I think Cam could have a nice rushing game here, but Miami's defense as a whole is really interesting going into the season because they add Byron Jones to Xavier Howard on the outside. They can play man with both those guys, kind of similar how New England does it with, you know, J.C. Jackson, Jonathan Jones, and Gilmore. Not that they're that level, but, you know, they're still pretty damn good. And then their pass rush should be better. I mean, Miami was third worst in pass rush last year, and they added Kyle Van Noy, they added Shaq Lawson, they added Emmanuel Ogba, so that should be better. But I think Cam can take advantage of the fact that this team plays a lot of man. He's going to run, and I think the price is kind of fair for him. But other than that, I'm with you. I do not like anybody from Miami. Devontae Parker's been a little bit hampered by a hamstring injury. He's probably going to play, but he's been limited, and he's got Gilmore. I know he's had some success against Gilmore, but I don't care. I'm not playing him on this slate. You know, not really the spot for me for Gesicki, and the Miami backfield's kind of a mess. So I'm really just Cam and maybe some James White. That's it.
Okay, so, I mean, I get the point about Cam Newton. I think to your point about him, if you are going to go the Cam Newton route, I don't hate him, but the only way that I can get behind playing him, I don't want to play him in GPPs. I want the correlation. I want to stack some games. If you're going to play him, run him in cash. At 6,100, his price is great.
Mm-hmm.
I don't disagree with you on that. He's one of the lowest starting quarterbacks that you can get that I think that still has a ceiling as well as an immensely high floor. So in cash, that's fine. I don't disagree with playing Cam Newton. But all right, man, so let's move on to a game that I think is going to be really, really popular this week. Everybody's going to talk about DeSean Jackson Smash Week. DeSean Jackson! And it's the Eagles versus the Washington football team. Totals at 44. Eagles are favored by 6. Are you playing this game or not? I understand people wanting to play this game, and I get it, dude. I think I am mostly a GPP player. I don't play a lot of cash. I'm probably fading this game in most different avenues because I think it's going to be very, very popular. But if you are, if you're going to play it, I do think there's some interesting pivots here. Where do you stand, dude?
Super interesting game, right? You have the Antonio Gibson factor. He's 4K. He's probably going to be really popular. But there's definite concerns with him. He's facing one of the best run defenses in the NFL. They were also good against pass-catching running backs last year, the Eagles were. So that's not great. Plus, there's going to be some J.D. McKissic and Peyton Barber. It's just going to happen. Then you have DeSean Jackson, who's also probably going to be popular because of the Eagles' receivers are banged up. The narrative of him in week one, I mean, his last 2 week ones, 8 for 154 and 2, 5 for 146 and 2. Like, really, really productive stuff. But what if Jalen Reagor plays, who's apparently practicing now? Then you have Miles Sanders. I mean, really cheap price tag, a really solid matchup. There's been reports of him maybe having a limited role in week one, but then at the same time, the Eagles have cut all their running backs, essentially, so that tells us maybe that he won't be limited. Those three factors are really interesting on this slate and in this game. But for me, like, why is nobody talking about Zach Ertz? Why wouldn't Zach Ertz just be the play?
It's a good spot. Yep.
Really good spot.
I don't agree with you. Washington is, they were horrible versus tight end last year. I mean, I think they were, off the top of my head, they were 31st in DVOA versus the tight end position. And Zach Ertz has a history of smashing them in the mouth.
Oh, he crushes them. They allowed the fourth most fantasy points to tight ends last year as well. Washington did. And, I mean, we know for a fact Zach Ertz is getting targets. DeSean Jackson, even in this role, he could see 4 targets. And could he pay off on those 4 targets? Absolutely. He's done it all the time. But I feel a lot safer about Zach Ertz. And DeSean Jackson and GPPs, like, if he's going to be chalk, that is a player that it wouldn't be bad to be underweight on, because if he doesn't go off, he's not only not going off, but he's probably not giving you a floor either.
Or you pivot to Jalen Reagor at 4,300. Like,
right, if he plays.
If he plays, he becomes an elite tournament play as a pivot off of DeSean Jackson in the same game. Because people are going to click the button on DeSean Jackson. They're not going to play Reagor. They're going to be scared off. If you want to play this game. So I like Miles Sanders. And for all the reasons that we've talked about previously, we love Miles Sanders. I worry about what his workload looks like this week. I do. I think there are positive indicators. For me, he's going to be an ownership play. I think he is grossly mispriced for the workload he could possibly see. But he's a guy that it's going to come down for me playing Miles Sanders. Yes, I think he is ridiculously mispriced. If he comes in like he is the uber ridiculous chalk, then I might be fading him this week. Or if I'm playing three max, maybe he makes it as a 1 of 3 instead of like a lock for me. It really comes down to an ownership play for me and some of the reports that we get as the week goes on for Miles Sanders. I'm not going to play Boston Scott. I think it's just getting too cute. I like Reagor. I'm not going to probably play any of DeSean Jackson. If you want to play him, I think that you have to play him in cash. That is absolutely definitively true, because he smashes and you're screwed. Like, you might as well just burn your lineups. I'm with you. I think that Zach Ertz is a fantastic play on this slate. I don't think that it, like, if you look at his pricing, he's one of the most expensive tight ends. I mean, he's fourth right now at 5,800. I do think there is a huge discrepancy between him and Kittle. So I like Ertz. Again, I think that just considering a lot of the running backs, and we talked about Hayden Hurst. I think that Hurst has an amazing ceiling this week. I have a hard time getting to Zach Ertz, but I'm early in my builds. Like, I probably will have some exposure to Ertz. Moving over to Washington, Antonio Gibson is bad chalk. I'm not playing him this week. At 4K versus a team that in two of the last three seasons has been top 10 in DVOA versus pass-catching running backs, I just can't do it, dude. Like, not without seeing, like, I think that he could have even 12 to maybe 15 touches in this game and not do a whole heck of a lot with them. And I think that I'm going to probably stay away from Terry McLaurin in this game. I think that in game stacks, he is going to be very, very popular. And plus, I think that people want to press the button on players that they love or have loved all offseason. So going against Darius Slay, I think that Dwayne Haskins, I do think that this team is going to throw the ball. I just can't tell you that this week, I can't tell you that they're going to be very, very effective in doing so. Any further thoughts before we move on?
Yeah, like, I'm in tournaments, I don't think I'm going to have any Gibson, because what's the ceiling? Like, if I fade Antonio Gibson, I don't see a scenario where I look at his box score at the end of the game and
he's
go,
not
why
burn
did
you.
I fade him? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
He's going to have 12 touches, and if he gets 5 catches, he'll probably exceed value, but I don't think he's going to smash or anything. And
dude,
I think I'm a little...
He would need 2 touchdowns to kill you.
Right, and I don't think he's getting that, so...
Nope.
I'm a little bit higher in McLaurin than you do. I do think he's going to be relatively popular. He did go get at Darius Slay when they played the Lions last year, and the Eagles were the worst against wide receiver ones last year. That should change this year with the addition of Slay, and this isn't the spot for me, but I'm telling you right now, I'm going to target number 2 receivers against the Eagles a lot this year. I just don't know if it's going to be this week with Washington. Real quick, before we get out of here, Dwayne Haskins, cheapest quarterback in the slate, 5K. Yeah or nay?
Nay.
I don't blame you.
Nay. No ceiling, man. I just don't see a ceiling for him. Like, what do you see a ceiling at? 240, maybe 2 tutties?
I was going to say, like, 16 points.
Yeah, I just can't see it. There's no way, even in cash, like, there's no way, like, if you're going to pay down, and we're going to get to these games later, there are so many quarterbacks that are around, like, in that mid 5K range, low 5K range, that I would much rather play. I can't play Haskins. So moving on. Las Vegas Raiders head to Carolina to take on the Panthers. Panthers are favored by 1. Total sits at 46.5. This game is very interesting to me, Adam. Where do you stand on it?
I mean, Josh Jacobs, probably going to be really popular. He's one
Josh
of those...
Jacobs week, baby!
Dude, he's one of those running backs under 7K. We know how bad Carolina was against the run last year. I mean, they allowed 1.9 rushing touchdowns per game. easily the most in the NFL. And you look at, like, the advanced metrics, they allowed running backs to get to the second level at the highest rate in the NFL. Jacobs, we know there's some concerns about his pass-catching upside, but in this matchup, I don't care. And I think we get too cute sometimes where it's especially, like, a site on DraftKings. You're like, yeah, Josh Jacobs is a solid play, but do I want to play him on DraftKings if he only catches one or two passes? Like, I understand the PPR aspect is important, but at the end of the day, the guys are good plays whether they're going to be elite pass catchers or not. And for me, Josh Jacobs in a spot where the game shouldn't get out of hand either way. And if it does, if somehow in Vegas is a factor, then that's better for him. But I don't think it's going to be a game where Vegas is chasing, you know, by two touchdowns or whatever. That's good for Jacobs. The matchup's great. And as far as a per carry basis, he's going to get plenty. So, yeah, he's got to be viewed as one of the better running back plays of the entire week.
So for everybody that wants to talk about his lack of pass catching upside, I'm going to sit here for a second and I'm going to point you to the box scores and all the GPP winning weeks for Derrick Henry. And then I want you to come back and talk to me about it, because he can smash, dude. Jacobs can run all over this team, and people want to talk about negative game scripts. You need to head over and look at my pace and play calling article if you want to talk to me about negative game scripts and Josh Jacobs, because the Raiders, you're not doing your homework if you're talking to me about this, okay? Because the Raiders last year, in neutral and negative game scripts, were still the sixth highest rushing team in the NFL. Them being down in games is not going to stop them from running Josh Jacobs. So he's still going to get touches, even if the Panthers, if you project, which I do like the Panthers offense in this game, the cornerbacks versus Teddy Bridgewater and company are bad. DJ Moore is in a great spot to absolutely eviscerate the Raiders here. He's going to see a lot of Arnett, a rookie. I think that he can crush him in coverage. If you want to roll the secondary receivers, that's fine. I mean, I'm probably playing DJ Moore as a one-off as opposed to, like, possibly stacking this game. If you are going to stack this game, the route that I'm probably going to go that most people are not, that I think is a little bit more interesting to me, is looking at Ian Thomas. And we've talked about Ian Thomas. This is a matchup that I think that he could win and get more targets and be the second option. The third option, possibly behind McCaffrey and DJ Moore. If I'm stacking this game, it's Teddy, it's CMC, obviously. And I'm not going to give any stats about CMC. He's a damn good play. I know he's 10K. It doesn't matter. Yeah, but, he's going to get weighted opportunity.
D-Bro, he's in a new offense.
Oh, dear God in heaven. Go look at what Clyde Edwards-Helaire did in this offense and then tell me.
This is why I'm excited about Joe Brady's offense with DJ Moore especially, because he talked all offseason about, my offense is predicated on getting explosive, really talented playmakers the ball in space and letting them do stuff after the catch. Hello, DJ Moore is one of the best yak receivers in the NFL. And oh, by the way, the Raiders were fourth worst in yards after the catch allowed in the NFL in 2019. So I think DJ Moore is going to smash this week, and he might go overlooked. So I really like this game, obviously. I love DJ Moore. McCaffrey's McCaffrey. Perfectly fine with Bridgewater. I don't even hate Curtis Samuel as a one-off just because the Raiders give up a ton of deep passing plays, and you know it just wasn't there for Samuel last year because Kyle Allen was like the worst deep ball passer in football. So I like a lot of players from that side. I think the most interesting thing from this game, though, is definitely the Vegas receivers. What do you think of Henry Ruggs and Bryan Edwards?
So real quick on Ian Thomas.
Yeah, go ahead.
Raiders were 25th in DVOA versus tight ends. I'm more likely to go Teddy, CMC, DJ Moore, and then just look at the Raiders. But I'm telling you, getting it in here, if you're looking at cheap tight ends, Ian Thomas at 3,400 is not a bad play. But moving over to the Raiders, their receivers are uber interesting in this one, man. Look, Dante Jackson, we talked about it before we turned on the mics. Dude can blaze. That doesn't really matter a whole lot because he is not very good outside of being really, really freaking fast. Panthers last year, I know they have a new defensive system. They ran a lot of zone. We don't know what this coverage is going to look like this year, but I got to get this up in here. Jackson was terrible last year. Like, impressive man coverage. 109, 101, 149 QBRs. He allowed 4 touchdowns on only 23 targets. So I like Ruggs. I think he's mispriced. He's 5,100. He's in a really good spot. Darren Waller can absolutely be a great play. I don't know if I'm going to pay up considering we're talking about But if you're going to stack this game, I think that he's in play for you. I'm more inclined to run it back. Like if I'm going to go Panthers, it's Teddy, it's CMC, it's DJ Moore running it back with Jacobs on the other side. Now, if you wanted to go a Vegas receiver over, like if you're worried about Josh Jacobs getting volume in negative game scripts, then it's Henry Ruggs for me because I think he can win a foot race with anybody. And I won't be surprised if he goes off. Even if he has like four targets, if he busts like 120 yards and two touchdowns, won't surprise me in the slightest in this game.
I've already seen him on Twitter and everything getting comp to the week one 2020 version of Marquise Brown. Like, may not run a crazy amount of routes, but like he could just get it done on four targets, like you said.
Good.
It is going to be interesting to see him against Dante Jackson just for the speed element, but I agree. Like, this Panthers defense is projected to be one of the worst in the NFL. That's good for Derek Carr, who we know does not force throws, but I don't think he's going to have to in this game. I think Derek Carr is extremely valuable at just 50. I guess he's a little bit more expensive than I thought, but 5,900 is not awful if you want to stack this game. Is it weird if I think Bryan Edwards might be a lot more popular than people realize by the end of the week? He's getting talked up on Twitter every single day.
Yeah, I think he's getting talked up, and I'm curious if he garners very similar ownership to Henry Ruggs. Like, I won't be surprised. I won't be surprised if his roster percentage sits very, very equivocal to Henry Ruggs. So, yeah, and for me, it's all Ruggs in this game. Like, I don't really have a whole lot of interest in Bryan Edwards in this one. All right, man, let's move over to Indy versus Jacksonville. Total sits at 44.5. Indy is favored by 7. What do you see for this game?
You know what I see in this game? I see a massive mismatch between the Colts offensive line and the Jags defensive line. I mean, Jacksonville, Jacksonville could not stop the run last year when they had Calais Campbell and Marcell Dareus. Those guys are gone. This is a smash spot for the Indianapolis Colts running game. The problem is, what is the touch distribution going to look like? There was a report that came out today from The Athletic saying Jonathan Taylor was drafted to spell Marlon Mack. No, he wasn't. I'm just going to put it out there. No, he wasn't. And that you don't trade up for a guy in the second round to spell your starting running back. I'm sorry. It's not how it works. For seasonal leagues, I tweeted it, and apparently everybody, it's like getting a lot of likes for some reason, but I tweeted I'm starting Jonathan Taylor over Melvin Gordon this week. The upside for the Colts running game is too much to pass up on this year. If you look at what the Colts did against this Jacksonville running game last year, they ran for 347 yards and 4 touchdowns on 52 carries against the Jags last year. The Jags allowed 6 different 100-yard rushers in 2019. 2 of them came in the same game against the Colts. It was Marlon Mack and Jonathan Williams, who both went over 100 yards, and Mack scored a touchdown. Like, I think this defensive line, they gave up, Jacksonville gave over 5 yards per carry when either Dareus or Calais Campbell were off the field last year. They're both not there. I just don't see how they get any sort of pressure on this running game led by Quentin Nelson. The problem is, in DFS, like, Taylor's the higher upside guy, we know that, and just as a player. He's also more expensive, where Marlon Mack is 5,300, Taylor is 5,700. I love the spot, but I worry about, could they just both get enough to be fine plays, whereas neither one will be a great play because neither are going to get, you know, 25 touches or anything like that. But I love the matchup. It's on paper one of the biggest mismatches of the entire week at any position.
Yeah, and I think the point of it is, and I wrote this up in Pace and Play Calling, if the Jags don't make this a game, the Colts are going to just run the ball down their throats. Like last year, they were 29th in explosive run rate allowed. That's going to get even worse this year. Like they're probably going to be bottom of the league. And to your point, I wrote it up on FTN Daily way back when pricing came out. I said if we got clarity on Marlon Mack and Jonathan Taylor, one of these guys can smash. I worry about the workloads like you're talking about. I think that if you're going to play one guy, you go for the guy that can hit the home run, and that's Jonathan Taylor. Both these guys are in the mid-5Ks. It could be getting a little bit too cute just considering the soft pricing that we have for this week. So yeah,
that's the only concern I have. But
yep.
To your point, like you said, if Jacksonville gets, you know, just gashed on the ground and they fall behind, Marlon Mack's not getting, you know, the work late. They're going to let Jonathan Taylor kind of go to town. They're not going to give more. They know what they have in Marlon Mack. And, you know, Jonathan Taylor, they expect to be their future back. But if this game gets out of hand, it's going to benefit Taylor, whereas it would hurt Marlon Mack. So I'm intrigued by the upside. I think you can play them. I just think you need to understand that there's a good chance that they both, like, they can both have good games. We saw the Colts do this with the running backs last year against this team, and they're worse now. So that is, to me, the most interesting mismatch of the entire slate. But then you have the passing game, where I think you're going to like some cheap Colts in the passing game.
Yeah, dude. So I know we talked about it on a waiver wire episode at the very, very beginning of the week. For me in this game, I really like the Jags pass catchers, and I really, really like Jack Doyle in this game. I talked about it on that one. You want to hear my whole spiel, go back and listen to our waiver wire episode. Jack Doyle is taking on a defense that was one of the worst versus tight ends last year. You don't have Trey Burton. I don't think Mo Alie-Cox is going to be a thing. I'm all in on Jack Doyle. He's 3,600 on DraftKings. I think that he could have a top 10 week in tight end scoring this week. I'm ranking him as a top 12 tight end on FTNFantasy.com. Come at me. We could talk about it. You got a problem with the ranking? I don't really care, because I think he's going to get a touchdown this week. He's one of my touchdown calls for the week. So really, really love Jack Doyle. If you're going to play any Colts pass catcher, I really think it's Jack Doyle. I talked about my love for Paris Campbell. I think that he's in play. I'm a little bit lower on him than I was during the beginning of the week. But just talking to a few beat reports, I think DJ Hayden in the slot is the best cornerback that they have. So I'm all in on Jack Doyle. For the Jaguars, I think it's DJ Chark week, dude. Like, I think he is going to just crush this week. If you look at him and Minshew, I like this week. Like, I am really trying to talk myself out of playing some Minshew and GPPs, because
it's such an easy story to tell, though. I mean, we think the Colts can handle this game. You play Jonathan Taylor or Marlon Mack, and then you run it back with Minshew and Chark. Like, Chark crushed his team last year with Foles at quarterback, and Foles was not good last year.
Yeah, but you look at the last time that we saw the Jaguars on the field, Week 17, Minshew was the QB2 in all of fantasy. Threw for 295, three tutties. The Colts give it up to pass-catching running backs. So I'm not sitting here telling you to play Chris Thompson. You play Gardner Minshew, and you get your exposure to Chris Thompson through Gardner Minshew. So for me, it's Minshew, it's Chark. I want Chris Conley, because I think that the outside corners, and a lot of people have been in the streets talking about, like, the Colts are good defense. Dude, I'm not there. Like, I think that they could be a solid defense. Outside corners scare the bejesus out of me. Like, you're talking about DJ Chark versus this secondary, and yes, they have new cornerbacks, but it's not a totally gutted secondary. Last year when he was healthy, 15 targets, 8 receptions, 104, and 2 touchdowns. Xavier Rhodes is running on empty. He cannot turn and run with DJ Chark and Chris Conley. You look at him and Rockyson on the outside. They are slow. They can be burnt. Rockyson gave it up last year in a smaller sample. I really like Minshew. I think if he hits the ceiling, it's on the back of DJ Chark. If Thompson gets a touchdown. So if Minshew goes for the 3 touchdowns, I think it's 1 or 2 to Chark, 1 to Conley, and 1 to Chris Thompson. And I really like Gardner Minshew at his price point. I like this game, especially if we're talking about the Colts get up, they want to run the ball. Minshew is going to be throwing in this game.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about those 4K pivots from DeSean Jackson or whoever, and Antonio Gibson. Chris Thompson and Chris Conley are both 4K. Conley was listed as number 2 on the depth chart. He is well ahead of Dede Westbrook. And he's still ahead of Laviska Shenault, who I like. I probably won't go there on this slate. They're talking about using him in creative ways, but I want to see it first with him as much as I love him. And the Colts play this really soft zone defense where they do not give up a ton of big passing plays. That's how they play defense. That bodes well for Chris Thompson to catch, you know, 6 or 7 balls in this game if they get behind. And yeah, I have no issues with DJ Chark because, like you said, Rockyson, really slow. Xavier Rhodes, slow and just not good anymore. So I have no problems with those. And like I said, it's an easy story to tell with how you can stack this game.
Yep. All right, man, let's move over to Cleveland versus the Ravens. Total's at 48.5. Baltimore is favored by 8.5. I'm just going to straight up tell you, I want no Cleveland Browns.
The Ravens
defense is really, 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 better, really, like, really good. They're ridiculous.
They added Patrick Queen and Calais Campbell. Good. Like, they're, yeah, I agree. We can cut that. I don't want any Browns except for, like, the littlest Nick Chubb, because he's just really good. But this is another mismatch spot. Cleveland should have a or Baltimore should have a field day running on Cleveland. I mean, yikes. Just major yikes. The Browns linebackers are the worst in the NFL. They're relying on Mack Wilson, who's a really talented player, but he's hurt. He's not even going to play in this game. They lost Joe Schobert. Mark Ingram, I think, is going to go off in this game. Cleveland last year, I mean, teams called run on them 46% of the time, fifth highest rate in the league. Over 40% of the yards allowed by this defense came via the run. That was the highest rate in the league. And 49.3% of the yards by Baltimore's offense came via the run, most in the league. So it's a team that gave the most yards via the run against a team that runs the ball the most and produces the most yards via the run. I just don't see how they slow down this running attack with Mark Ingram, Lamar Jackson, and J.K. Dobbins. I think Ingram's going to smash. He's was second in goal line carries last year with 13. I still think as good as Dobbins is, that's going to stay Ingram's role for now. The Browns were worst team in the NFL in missed tackles. I don't see how they slow this rushing game down. Not to mention they allowed 25 rushing yards per game to opposing quarterbacks, second most in the NFL last year. That's pretty good for Lamar Jackson, I would say. This is another spot where it's just a pure mismatch.
Yep. I don't have a lot of interest as far as the pass catchers. Yes, I know that, like, Andrews could have a great game versus Cleveland in this one. I'm not going to fight anybody on that. I just have a hard time getting away from thinking that Baltimore is going to run, and run some more. I don't know that I'm going to get to Lamar Jackson just because of the fact that, I mean, look, I'm not running it back with anybody on the Cleveland side. I want the correlations. I'm not really a huge proponent of playing quarterbacks naked. If you want to go that route, I'm not going to fight you because, yeah, Lamar Jackson could have a great, great game. But as the most expensive quarterback on the slate, I really can't get there this week. I think it really out of this game for me, it's Mark Ingram or it's nobody for me because he's at 5,500. And we talked about it yesterday. I gave a little bit of preview to this game. Cleveland last year was second in the NFL in broken tackles allowed. Ingram is going to see 15 to 17 touches in this game. That's definitively going to happen. He could break off one or two long runs, and he could pay off his price tag. So that's really the only interest that I have in this game.
I might get to some Mark Andrews, but I do agree. If I'm going like really high up, I want Kittle. And where Andrews is kind of priced, like, Ertz is just cheaper, and he's not.
Yep.
He's only $200 cheaper, but I just think there's going to be more passing volume for Ertz. Again, Dobbins not yet, but like he could pop one off just because the matchup is so good. But I think Mark Ingram he falls that same kind of line. People don't like playing Mark Ingram on DraftKings, where it's like I understand he's probably not going to get 20 carries because he didn't all last year, but he only needs 15 in this spot, and he's still going to get the goal line work on the best rushing offense in the NFL. Second most yards before contact for the Ravens last year. It's just so hard to defend them. So Mark Ingram, legitimately one of my favorite plays the entire slate. I don't care that he's not going to catch 5 receiving touchdowns again. I don't care, at least not for week one.
Yep, I'm with you there. So moving over to Chargers versus the Bengals. Total sits at 44. Chargers are favored by 3.5. I came into this game thinking I was really, really going to be in on the Bengals, and I've actually kind of gravitated away from that a little bit because looking at this secondary, Hayward's going to be on A.J. Green. I think they're going to run a lot of plays. With the injury to Derwin James, reports out of camp are talking about that Desmond King is going to play a little bit more safety and stuff like that because that's really where I was looking at exploiting this pass defense for the Chargers. If we see Chris Harris on the slot, Chris Harris as an outside corner is total and absolute toast. Like, he got beat by speed all last year.
John Brown beat him deep for, like, a 40-yard touchdown. Why do I remember that?
Because I'm a Bills fan. But in the slot, I think that Tyler Boyd, like, Chris Harris could give Tyler Boyd some fits. I think that A.J. Green is look, coming off the injuries, we just don't know. I'm higher on A.J. Green, but going up against Hayward in week one is a tough matchup. And he's going to follow A.J. Green back and forth across the field. I don't really know that, like, and everybody was talking about Mixon. If you look at it on paper, the Chargers' run defense last year was really bad. They addressed that this year. So they got Kenneth Murray in the draft. They signed Linval Joseph. Over his last 5 seasons, he's coming off a down season. The previous 4, he was amongst the league's best and interior run defenders. So I think the Chargers' run defense is going to be much improved. I think Tyrod Taylor is going to garner a lot of ownership this week. I think he is the cash game quarterback this week.
It's hard not
if
to
you're
like
going
to
play. No, it's hard not to like him, but in GPPs, I think that he's gonna. People are gonna throw the cash lineups into GPPs. I think that his ownership is gonna be really, really high, and I'm just probably gonna stay away from this entire game outside of playing Austin Eckler because the Bengals are terrible in every single facet of the defense, but they are immensely atrocious versus the run. You talk about running backs on the ground, in the air. They are amongst the league's worst. And I think that the Chargers are going to be underrated as far as how many plays. Because if you go back to 2016, you look at my pace and play calling article. If you look at 2016, the Chargers were 14th, 11th, and 8th in pace. 8th in positive game script plays per game. So even if they're up and they are crushing the Bengals, I don't think that they're going to slow down. I think their pace is going to be a little bit underrated. And I really, Austin Eckler is mispriced. Like, he is a top five running back for me this week. I'm probably going to lock him in. Like, I love him at his price, dude. Like, I think that he's got a very similar ceiling to Christian McCaffrey, but he's 3K less on DraftKings.
Yeah, I like Eckler a lot, too. I think he'll be somewhat popular, but I don't really care.
I don't care.
I like Tyrod. I mean, the Bengals allowed over 30 rushing yards per game to quarterbacks last year, the most in the NFL. I know a lot of people will say, oh yeah, that was because Lamar Jackson had the huge game against him. It was guys other than Lamar Jackson too. Like, they gave up a lot of rushing production to quarterbacks regardless. So I think Tyrod's a really solid play. Like you said, definitely in cash. Keenan Allen is just like, I don't think he's a bad play. It's just where he's priced. I think there's higher ceilings with Tyler Lockett, DJ Moore, Allen Robinson, DJ Chark, Calvin Ridley, like guys priced a little bit higher, a little bit lower than him. So he kind of just by default falls out of my player pool. If you get to him, I don't think it's a bad decision, especially because Mike Williams probably doesn't look like he's going to play in this game. But I don't think it's like a priority or anything for me. Same with Hunter Henry, especially at 5,300. Like, I'll just play multiple other tight ends instead of him. And then for the Bengals, I don't hate Mixon just because I think he's a little bit too cheap, too, at 6,700. Another guy that I would like to see involved a little bit more in the passing game, but they obviously committed to him down the stretch last year. I still think they're going to give him 20 touches a game, and at 6,700, he's really, really affordable. But yeah, other than that, like, AJ Green to stay away from me. You're not playing any tight ends from Cincinnati. Joe Burrow, it's just, I don't think it's a slate for Joe Burrow. I like him, but like, this is still, even without Derwin James, a good secondary. And with, you know, Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram, like, the pass rush should be solid too. And that's still a question mark. We know they have to be better with Jonah Williams there, but the pass rush is still probably the biggest question mark on this offense for Cincinnati right now.
I had a little bit of interest at the beginning of the week in John Ross, possibly if he was going to start or play. Only if I thought Chris Harris was going to play on the outside, I thought Ross could get behind him because we're talking about speed versus Harris. But, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it for me on this game. Moving over to Tampa Bay versus the Saints. 49.5 total. Saints are favored by 4. I like this game a lot more if Mike Evans was not dinged up. I think that this game is one of the games that could go nuclear, but I think that it has a very, very... The way that that happens, I think, is teetering on the edge right now. Because I think that for that to happen, what needs to happen is that Tampa has to get up early. And they have to force the Saints not to run the ball and not play slow. Because the Saints are not going to play at a high pace. That's not going to happen. But could they pass a ton? Yes. But they're going to have to be forced to do that. If Mike Evans is banged up in this game, or heck, if he's out, I just don't know if that happens because Mike Evans is going to see Lattimore on the outside. He does not have a good history. So even if he's active, I think it's bad things for Mike Evans. I'm struggling right now because I have him as a very, very low end, and I'm probably way lower than consensus. I have him as a low end wide receiver too, with the idea that he plays this week, and that might still be generous for what I think that could happen in this game. But I think that it bumps down Tom Brady's projection if Mike Evans is out, and since he's dinged up, I think that they could run a lot of plays. They could be fast because last year under Arians, fourth in negative game script, first in positive game script pace. They were going to pass, I mean, they were top five in passing rates in both of those game scripts. So the avenue is there, but unless they're going to put Chris Godwin inside and hide him away from Marshawn Lattimore, who only played in the slot or followed receivers into the slot at 4%, that's the only way that I could see, like, Brady just feeding Chris Godwin and Arians hiding him in the slot and playing a ton of 11. That's really the only way where I think this game could still go off. So I'm probably fading Michael Thomas and GPPs because I just have a hard time playing like 9K when I think that there are other receivers that are in great, great spots. Like, if you wanted to stack this game, if you wanted to go, like, Tampa is terrible versus tight ends. If you wanted to get contrarian and go with Jared Cook and you wanted to play Emmanuel Sanders, you want to play Alvin Kamara, even though Tampa, like, I'm probably staying away from all the running backs in this game.
I like Kamara.
I like him a lot. I really, really do. And if you want to get different, if you want to play Kamara, if his ownership is going to be really, really stinking low, I think that he is in a good spot
I think it will be. I think that Eckler and below range are going to be popular. Eckler, Jacobs, Miles Sanders. Like, I think those guys are going to be popular. And by default, you're going to see Kamara and Dalvin Cook lower owned. And Kamara on a per-carry basis is not a great spot, but they use him in the passing game way more against this team because you can't run up the middle against their D-line. I think he had 17 catches in two games against them last year. The injury, the back thing doesn't seem to be a big deal anymore. The contract seems to be any day now from being settled. I like Kamara a lot in tournaments here. These are two defenses that are pass funnels. I mean, the Saints and Bucks are two of the better run defenses in the NFL. I'm especially staying away from Tampa's running game. I think it's been like 40 or 50 games consecutively where the Saints have not allowed a 100-yard rusher dating back to like 2 years ago. Like, it's ridiculous. And now you have the added wrinkle of Leonard Fournette and Ronald Jones completely off that. Thomas is going to be hard for me to get to. I know he was super, super dominant at home last year. And
we talked about Carlton Davis is not bad, dude.
Yeah, and Jamal Dean's solid too. And Tampa Bay, down the stretch last year was really good against wide receiver ones. And are they going to shut down Michael Thomas? Absolutely not. But in GPPs, like, I don't know, is the ceiling as high as some of these other guys? Maybe it's not in this week. But yeah,
if you're going to get wild with this one, the way that I would go with it is Breeze, Kamara, Jared Cook, and running back with Chris Godwin. That's the way that I would stack this game.
If Mike Evans is out and he wasn't practicing again Thursday, and they keep saying, and it sounds like he's going to be a game time decision, which this is a 425 game.
I don't even want to play him, even if he's active.
No, I'm not playing Mike Evans. But I'm saying, does Scotty Miller become a thing?
No, not for me. Like,
no,
I don't think that. No, man. Like, do you think Scotty Miller? Because we're talking about, he's not going to follow. Lattimore is not going to follow Godwin into the slot. Do you think Scotty Miller can win versus Marshawn Lattimore?
Yeah, he's better than Mike Evans. So, just kidding. Obviously, just kidding. It's really interesting to see if Mike Evans gets ruled out, how they use Chris Godwin. If they do just hide him in the slot, or if they just say, you know what, you're an incredible player. Well, go make plays against Marshawn Lattimore. Because if that's the case, and they just don't hide him in the slot, then Scotty Miller would be a thing. I think Mike Evans' injury status is really changed the landscape of this entire game, though.
We talk about Arians being like we can't trust him on RBs and stuff like that. I don't think that he's a donkey coach, though. Like, I don't think that he is going to sit here and say, okay, our premier outside wide receiver who would be drawing coverage from Marshawn Lattimore, who does not go to the slot, we're going, like, let's just play this out from a common sense standpoint. And I know we're assuming rational coaching, but outside of things regarding running back usage, I think with Bruce Arians being an offensive mind, we can assume some rationality about, like, okay, this is how I attack a defense. Putting Godwin outside and asking him, saying, okay, you're going to be the primary focal point with Mike Evans banged up, or if Lattimore takes him away in the passing game, why in the heck are they going to put Godwin outside and say, okay, win this? Like, it makes no sense to me. Like, I think they're going to put Godwin in the slot, and I think that I'm really curious what we see Godwin's ownership come in this week, because for all the offseason narratives about more 12, the Saints have been immensely good versus tight ends over the last few seasons, so I have no interest in Gronk, but I'm getting a lot more interest as we go through the week on Chris Godwin.
Yeah, it's going to be real interesting. Mike Evans, it sounds like he's going to be, like, right down to the wire. So, we'll see. 425 game.
Yep. All right, man. Let's move over to the Arizona Cardinals versus the 49ers. Total sits at 46. San Francisco is favored by 7.5. Outside of George Kittle, dude, I don't really have a whole lot of interest in this game. I mean, I consider and spell you an idea about Kenyon Drake. I think that the 49ers' run defense is still going to be really good. I think that Drake makes for an interesting play depending on where his ownership sits at. But I have a hard time getting really, really excited. And I know I really should be. But this game, DeAndre Hopkins changing teams onto a new team. Now he's going to face Richard Sherman, who primarily plays one side of the field so they can move him away from him. But Akello Witherspoon last year, when he was healthy, was a shutdown corner in the first few weeks of the season. Now, we saw him get burnt in the playoffs by Stephon Diggs. I don't think that he was healthy after he came down with the foot ailment. I don't think that he was healthy any part of the rest of the season because he was not even close to being the same player. So I've got really big concerns on Hopkins this week and this passing game and just really how this game goes, because I think that San Francisco could probably have their way, and I think they're going to run. I think they're going to play slow. If you want to pay up for Kittle, I'm not going to tell you not to do it. I don't hate it because I think that he could absolutely just crush in this game because the Cardinals can't tackle for crap. This is an offense that is based around he is going to be the number one option, and they're based around yards after the catch, and that's absolutely in Kittle's wheelhouse. So for this game, it's probably Kittle or nothing for me.
Yeah, Kittle should smash here. I mean, there is still the injuries to the wide receiver position for San Francisco. He could get more targets with that.
But Adam, are you going to pay up for him because he's 7,200?
I kind of want to in this spot. I really do. It's okay. Just such a good spot. I mean, Cardinals, most fantasy points, yards, and touchdowns per game to tight ends last year. They also had the most yards after the reception. That's Kittle's wheelhouse. Like, you feel a lot better about paying up for him if, you know, Brandon Ayuk and or Debo are out. I don't think either practiced on Wednesday. We'll see on Thursday. I mean, if they're both out, do you play? I mean, Kendrick Bourne's not even that cheap. That's the problem. He's 5K. Like, there's other plays I like at cheaper that we talked about at 4K. And Anthony Miller's the same price. Like, I'm just going to play Anthony Miller.
We don't know what Debo and Ayuk are going to do, or right, if Shanahan's just going to run the dang ball, or if he's going to target the passing game through the running backs.
I don't hate.
The running backs could be split up three ways, dude. Like, that's why, like,
I don't hate Garoppolo.
Yep.
And Kittle as a stack, and then if you want to run it back with Hopkins or somebody, I don't think you have to, but like, my two top plays in this game are easily Garoppolo and Kittle. The running backs from San Francisco, just like, if I'm going to play a split backfield or a committee or some sort of committee, I'm just going to play, I'd rather play Jonathan Taylor in his matchup than Raheem Mostert, you know what I mean? So I'm probably not on the backs. I don't love DeAndre Hopkins in this spot. Like, Sherman's going to stay on the left side like 98% of the time like he did last year. But like you mentioned, like, still a new offense, first game. We don't know what his exact role is going to be. It's a little bit concerning. And then Christian Kirk's, you know, at a price where I'd rather play Anthony Miller and other guys. And then are you going to play Dan Arnold in week one? Probably not. So, yeah.
I can't play Jimmy G, and the reason is he's 5,800. If I'm going to pay down for quarterback, give me Minshew at the same price or give me Teddy for 100 more. Like, I can't get on Garoppolo this week.
The thing with Garoppolo is we've seen him have so many games where he has one touchdown or fewer last year just because that's the way this Niners offense operates. They just run the ball.
If they can run the ball, they're going to run the ball. That's what's going to happen.
Right. So, Kittle, you know, smash play. If you can afford him, feel free to play him. I'm going to have some George Kittle this week. I think the spot is too good. And like you said, they're soft pricing, so you can still afford Kittle pretty easily and some other guys. So, yeah, I agree. And if Debo and or Ayuk are out, I mean, Kittle is, like, I'm facing Kittle in a lot of seasonal leagues this week, and I'm terrified. So I'm legitimately scared.
Yeah, as you should be. All right, so we're gonna touch on these last three games really quickly that are not on the main slate, just because we obviously know that even though this is DFS episode, like we stated, you're still gonna get nuggets away from this episode about your season long team. So Dallas and the Rams, I think this game, I'm so immensely sad this is not on the main slate.
You wanted to play all the Gallup, didn't you? Or CD.
No, I wanted to play all the freaking CD. I wanted to play all the Prescott. Mm-hmm. I wanted to play all of the Rams. Like, I think Jared Goff is in a great spot. Yeah. That both these teams are going to run a ton of plays. I think that Cooper Kupp is going to eat Jordan Lewis's lunch. I think that
everybody, I like both the receivers, man.
I think that everybody that drafted Tyler Higbee is going to be paid off handsomely in this game. Like, him and Everett are going to get peppered with targets. Dallas is terrible versus tight ends. Their linebackers are not good in coverage. They play a lot of zone defense. That's where I'm going in that game. Real quick, any guys that you want out of that game? Like, I like Cam Akers, dude, but I just don't know what's going to happen.
They're going to use all three of those guys, McVay said. Darrell Henderson looks like he's going to play. You can't trust that backfield in week one. I love Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, and Higbee. Like you said, there's good matchups. Like, Dallas's the back end of their defense is just not built to cover a lot of these teams, especially a team that has multiple weapons like the Rams. And yeah, Amari Cooper, he's banged up heading into a matchup with Jalen Ramsey. I'm good on that. CD's definitely interesting, and Gallup is definitely interesting too. And if you want to play Zeke, I mean, he's about as safe as any running back you can get, so.
It's fine. I mean, I'm just probably not going that direction. I mean, in season long, yes, obviously he's locked into your lineup, but in showdown and stuff, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, my favorite plays are Prescott, CD, Higbee. If you want to play Woods, that's fine too. I really, really love Kupp, though. Akers will still be a top 25 back for me this week because I think that he probably gets into the end zone once. But again, I'm not rushing to play him at DFS. Moving over to Pittsburgh versus the Giants, 47.5 total. Pittsburgh's favored by 3.5. It's the Steelers. It's all the Steelers. Mm-hmm. Giants are absolutely atrocious. They're terrible. I know that you're starting Saquon Barkley. Outside of that, I don't want any parts or pieces of this game. Nelson and Hayden on the outside are immensely good. I think that if you're going to get desperate for any Giants wide receiver, then it's Golden Tate because Hilton in the slot is god-awful.
Well, there was a report that came out like earlier that says Golden Tate's not 100% from his hamstring. So just,
well, then I'm off Golden Tate then too.
I literally saw that on Twitter as we were finishing up that last game. So yeah, for me, it's Juju and Deontay Johnson with Big Ben. I think Big Ben's a top 12 play this week. I think in my rankings, I have him like 10. I love him.
Ebron's a good play too.
Mm-hmm. I love Juju. Deontay Johnson, I would start over a lot of receivers this week. Like, somebody asked me Deontay Johnson or Marvin Jones. I said Deontay Johnson. I just think the Giants secondary is that bad. James Bradbury is their best corner. Then they have a bunch of just nobodies. Their run defense could be good enough to where James Conner won't go off. But I think Conner is still, you know, if you draft him in the top, you know, three or four rounds, you're starting him. Like, you're starting Saquon, you're starting Connor, and you're starting Evan Ingram without question, and Juju. And then Deontay Johnson's a really strong play, and so is Big Ben. Everybody else, I don't think you have to go there. Like,
agreed.
You know, Tate, Shepard, just the Daniel Jones. Like, the Giants' early season schedule is rough.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Deontay Johnson's going to be a high wide receiver three for me. I think that Juju, we're going to see a renaissance game out of him. I think that he's going to smash and grab this week. So moving over to Tennessee and Denver, 41.5 total. Denver's favored by 2.5. I think that line's going to move a little bit with all the Von Miller news. We'll see what that looks like by Sunday morning. But
is Derrick Henry the only player you're excited to start in this game? Like, AJ Brown, you're definitely starting still.
That's it.
But yeah, I mean, we talked about Sutton last podcast. We're not crazy about to start the season. Melvin Gordon, like, I'm starting Jonathan Taylor over Melvin Gordon in my own league. If I'm playing, you know, guys in multiple backfields with multiple players, I'm just going to play the matchup, and Taylor's is just way better than Melvin Gordon's.
So I'll say on Melvin Gordon real fast, if you got him, I think I would play him because of the fact of it is, even though it's going to be a split with Lindsay, I think that Gordon still holds the pass game role, and the Titans have been able, like, they're not amazing versus pass-catching running backs. So if it's one guy, I'm fine with starting Melvin Gordon because I think the way that Denver is going to attack the Titans' defense, which I think that this game is just going to be really slow. I think it's going to be nasty. But
it's going to be super slow.
Yeah, but I think that if you're going to go with a Broncos guy, I think that it's Melvin Gordon, and I don't mind rolling him out as an RB2. Like, if you drafted him there, you probably got to play him.
Same
and
with Sutton.
Pass-game usage, I think that he can get there. And if you got to start Sutton, that's fine. I've got him ranked probably more as a low wide receiver 2, high 3 this week. So I get it if you got to start him there.
Yeah, and you're starting A.J. Brown, although he's, you know, like, barely inside my top 20 last time I checked. And neither quarterback should probably be started.
Yep, I'm totally with that. So that is our game-by-game breakdown for all things DFS, as well as you can take all these little nuggets away and use them for your season-long lineups. So Adam and I are going to be back for 3 episodes next week, walking through waivers, our trade for, and next week we'll be back for game-by-game, talking main slate, talking all the games, helping you get ready for the weekend and all your lineups. So get subscribed, get ready, get entered to win the Kenny Galladay signed helmet. It's going to be given away soon, man. Get entered to win it. So for Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.